Do the words open source online publishing mean anything to you? If you use websites like Facebook and Twitter, you're utilizing that technology every day. Technology that was developed by two Australians covering the 1999 World Trade Organization protests in Seattle. On November 30th, anti-globalization activists were fighting back against the Seattle police, and for the first time ever, the world watched on a live feed from the Seattle Independent Media Center website, now known as Indie Media. Joining us on the phone to recount all this is Matthew Arneson. Hello, Matthew.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for joining us. Now, I just wanted to ask you to pop in the time machine with us and take us back to 1999. What was going on?
Well, it was a very interesting time for global media because on the one hand, you had traditional media, which was becoming more and more concentrated and patronizing around political activism. So you'd go to an event and get this really weird version of what you'd wonder whether the journalist had actually been to the same event that you'd been to. So a group of us in Sydney called Community Activist Technology were building technology to let activists tell their own stories. And we wrote software to do that, and we tested it out and had great success with lots of stories coming through these sort of temporary media centres that we set up.
Now, what was it like online back then? This is a pre-YouTube era, isn't it?
Yeah, YouTube didn't exist. Wikipedia was yet to be formed. Blogging was just starting up. So if you wanted to write a story online, you generally had to be an insider. You had to be a journalist working at a big newspaper website or know how to program your own website. So we thought it was really important to open that up to let people be able to tell their own stories so anyone in the audience could actually help tell the story.
Mm. So there you are, 1999, basic internet. And you're already working on sort of trying to break through, I guess, the gatekeeping by traditional mainstream media with news online. So how did you get from that point to being in Seattle?
Well, it was a real coming together. So the main thing, of course, the event, which was about the gathering of the global justice movement around democracy and around the balance between corporate power and people's rights. And that's what the big activist event in Seattle was all about. It was about the World Trade Organization having their meeting that week in Seattle. And alongside that, there was this grassroots movement to build an independent media center, which was a physical place that all of the activist journalists could go to actually put stories out. And they had a satellite feed set up, they had a daily newspaper they were printing, and they had the very beginnings of a website. So where I got involved is I found out they were doing this, and I, by coincidence, happened to be in Colorado in the same city as the person organizing that website. And I said, look, we've built this open source software in Sydney, which is doing something like what you're doing. Do you want to try it out? And they said, yes.
So an amazing coincidence there.
Yeah, it was. So I got home from that. That was a study trip. And I got home for the first time ever. I bought my own computer and took a couple of weeks off and just worked on that website to get it ready. So we actually started programming a week before the event. It just exploded. It was just fantastic to see.
Yeah, right. I understand that you got about 1.5 million views, which was more than what CNN was pulling in at the time.
Yeah. So not only was this the physical center in Seattle pumping out stories with all these volunteers, but one of the things we did is we had to decide how to control who could publish on the site. Mm. And before, when we'd done this, we'd only done it from within a center. And there'd only been a handful of us actually doing it in Sydney when we used this software before. But we knew there were hundreds of journalists coming into Seattle, and we just didn't have time to set up a password system. So we said, well, we've experimented before with just letting the audience contribute stories. Why don't we trust the audience and open it up so anyone can post on the front page? And that's how open publishing started. They decided to take that leap. And we put it together, and we got all of these, so many amazing stories coming through. Obviously, the actual events were very gripping, traumatic, brutal in some cases, but we also got all the creativity and the passion of those activists who are putting their bodies on the line for, you know, the democracy that they believed in.
Mm. So what's happened with that technology 20 years on?
Well, once we had that big hit with the website in Seattle, it started bouncing around the world, first around America and then overseas, and our software got reused and translated into other languages. And before we knew it, there were nearly 200 indie media centres around the world, running in parallel with the global justice movement that was, you know, thriving at that point. And it sort of bubbled on. Then you had Facebook and YouTube pop up, and activists started using those platforms as well. And also the other thing that's happened is that mainstream news sites have started more and more picking up storytelling from the audience as well. So I think a lot of the principles that we discovered then have been picked up and become a mainstream part of communication, which is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Now, that's sort of the tech side of things, but indie media has also continued on, hasn't it?
Yeah, indie media is still going. At first, it was very much paired with particular events, like particular protest action in the city. But the really long-lived indie media centres are actually tied to a core team of reporters that day after day, week after week, go out and gather stories, but from that activist perspective.
Mm. And how is that different from, say, a commercial setup?
Well, I mean, they're largely volunteer. They're trying to tell the story from that activist perspective, from a progressive perspective. They still do have an element of open publishing, although trolling is much more of an issue these days, because all of these platforms being so much more popular just means that a small number of people can have a big impact, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. Now, looking at things currently, I was interested in your thoughts on the Your Right to Know campaign.
The Right to Know campaign, remind me what that is.
It's the campaign against the government censorship and use of state security laws to lock journalists out of reporting on stories, especially whistleblowing.
Yeah, right. And the recent events with the ABC visited by the federal police. Yeah, I mean, we had our share of that with Indie Media Service being seized by the FBI back a few years ago. Yeah, it's very important that journalists be able to tell stories. And there is this balance, I guess, between going after genuine bad actors and trolls, I guess, in one end of the spectrum versus people trying to uncover the truth about what our governments are doing on our behalf. And it is a delicate balancing act. And I like to think that someone who is standing up for the rights of people, of ordinary people, would be protected by whistleblower laws.
Mm. So, Matt, here we are 20 years on. I wanted to round things off by asking what you see as the legacy of your work.
Well, rewinding just briefly back to 1990, we had this very binary approach to media where either you talk to someone face-to-face in real life, or if you wanted to do mass communication, it was all gatekeepers. It was all one way from these very sort of restricted institutions. Now I think what's happened is it's much more shades of grey. So you can have a conversation with a few people online or with a large number of people online. You can have stories going back and forth between the audience and the storytellers, and then you still have right at the end these extreme sort of dominant news sources. So we haven't fixed all the problems, but it is much more of a spectrum now, which I think is great to see.
All right, well, unfortunately we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
And that was Matt Arneson from one of the two folks who created the open source online publishing that dominates so much of our online experience these days, Facebook and Twitter being two great examples of that.